land and life are free. But you can give them to
welcome back to Dr. Jack. So I'm out. She's AV on the board. SP Futures down 26. NASDAQ Futures down 70. So this week's not starting out like last week, at least not yet. We will see on that. It's Easter Monday, so a lot of people in Europe are closed.
Oh, it's more than just an Easter Monday. It's Dingus Day, Paul.
Yeah, well, you're the only guy who knows what that is, but yeah, I'm sure you'll tell us, which is fine.
Well, Dingus Day is a Polish/Hungarian holiday that's been held for years in Hungary. It's in Hungary, in South Bend. And South Bend is a huge ethnic town in our youth.
Yep.
And every 4 years, Dingus Day becomes huge. It's imagine a Polish St. Patrick's Day, and it's centered around the West Side Democratic Club, fresh Polish beer and polka bands and politicians. I saw Bobby Kennedy there. I saw Jimmy Carter there. 2008, Bill Clinton was in town for the day campaigning for Hillary.
Is it
Indiana used to be a pivotal state in the elections.
Is it
the primaries?
Is it canceled today?
I have no idea.
I bet it is.
It probably is. It has to be.
You know, it's interesting, Frank. I finally broke out of my jail cell at my house and went out for a walk yesterday. Well, I was at the Home Depot a couple times on Friday getting stuff for, had some workers over and doing some stuff, but 6 feet apart, you know, it's absolutely astounding. You walk down the street and people are like, they walk away from you like he just dropped a stink bomb, for God's sake. I mean, it's like, we bought into this or what? Did everybody you see is a potential...
Nobody's convinced us otherwise.
Well,
it's being attacked with platitudes,
yeah.
Not facts. We don't have a plan for fighting the disease. We don't have a plan for reopening the economy. That was one thing I spent yesterday and this morning looking for.
No, there's
no federal plan.
No, there's not. And there's no state plan either.
It's not their job. This is a national problem.
Well,
the states are doing the best they can. No, it needs federal direction. This is a federal problem.
Well, what do you?
And I think
how do you
Trump
answer?
Is setting this up so he can blame someone.
How do you answer? Which Kevin has brought up. Of course, usually Kevin has all kinds of stuff behind what he says. Makes it very frustrating, doesn't it? Sometimes. But anyway, I had not even heard of that law that he popped up, was after the Katrina thing, where all these governors were convinced that the federal government, was so slow to respond, which obviously they are, and that they put a law through that said the governors could go do a lot of this stuff themselves and the Fed would just give them some money. So they essentially got the power themselves and without anybody having the foresight to think, what if we get a crisis that affects all 50 states? The idea was that if 9/11 happened, if Katrina happened, if wildfires happened, it would be concentrated in one area, if Mississippi flood, whatever it is, and they wanted to give the governors all this freedom to essentially do a lot of this stuff themselves, where they, before you had to wait for federal this, federal that. And Kevin had the, I'm sure he'll text in if he hears us talking.
Now, was that passed by a Republican Congress?
I don't know. I don't think
House
so.
And Senate?
Well, who's that?
It's just a curiosity.
You know, I don't know.
Here's the problem. Our states can't work together.
Well, that's...
Every single state has a different procurement procedure.
Well,
so you can't have Illinois, Michigan, and Illinois going to buy something as a consortium.
Right, but just
the only consortium we have, I think we call it the United States.
Right. Well, what I said was...
I don't see it.
I don't know that you... Sounds like you weren't listening. What I said was, it came on the heels of like three big crises that affected only one state. And the governor in that state was complaining that, hey, we can do a better job ourselves. You just get out of the way and give us the dough. Which I think in a crisis that affects one state is probably fairly accurate. But nobody anticipated that the next, quote, crisis would be one that affects all 50 states, and all 50 of these guys are competing with each other, and the federal government is useless, which is essentially where we are, right? But, I mean, there was a reason why this is like this way. It's this bill that gave all these guys all this power themselves, the idea they should go out and buy. If you need ventilators, you go buy them, was essentially what the bill said. I mean, Kevin will be on, or I'm sure he'll tweet in somewhere what the bill is. But so there was a tone change in how this stuff happened, Frank. And in retrospect, with something that affects everybody, it was a pretty horrible idea, right?
I would agree.
But tell that to the governor in California, waiting for people to show up to fight fires, and he says, "Look, just give me the money. I'll send out my own National Guard. I don't need you, but I have to wait for you guys to take me forever." Because we had two or three pretty slow-responding federal government crises, didn't we?
Oh, Puerto Rico still isn't done.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, forget the fact that most of our saline solution and stuff like that's made down there. You know, it's unbelievable. Our ineptitude. You know, I watch, everybody loves this guy Fauci, and I have read his biography, you know, fairly. I love the dude back in the 80s, and now all of a sudden, can anybody working in a bureaucracy for 30 years, can it screw them up?
Well, yesterday, Trump retweeted something that from another person that had hashtag Fire Fauci. You asked me yesterday if they're lying on purpose or it's something else, and I'm starting to think that if you fire anybody that tells the truth, then yes, you're lying on purpose.
Well, Carl, of course, I was going back and forth with him yesterday. He's absolutely convinced that we're no better off than Sweden, and Sweden did not put people at home. And I talked to some of my...
Why did he choose Sweden instead of South Korea that had the first case when we had our first case? And aggressively did it and had one case in 10 days, in the most recent 10 days.
South Korea found out the people who had it. They had tests earlier, and they traced everybody that person came in contact with. They did the trace style, which is what they did in Iceland and what they did in somewhere else. It's worked out real well. We didn't know any of that.
Well, yesterday Fauci said, and I saw it here, and it's been confirmed by other people, that this administration delayed social distancing for a month after the entire science team recommended it.
Well, you and I have been...
And Korea did not. We can say that we're seeing that it does level the plateau.
I think if you're...
I just want a plan.
Well, but here's been my case all along. It's not that I'm arguing with everybody, although everybody thinks I am. I can't get anybody to agree with me anywhere, so you're not alone. I think depending on where you are in the mess, okay, and how quickly you responded, unfortunately, your responses are different. And if we would have recognized, or whether their businesses should have told us, whether China would have helped us out, although I did write something pretty interesting. I thought I sent it to you, Frank. No, I can't find it. I must have sent it from this email. I got so many emails going. Some people now, we actually are on top of this in a lot of ways, where every person who tests positive, they're actually, of course, we got people that we won't give a test to, although I think it's getting better today. I think that Abbott Labs test, the 5-minute one, is starting to be used this morning in some places. Anyway, but I allegedly that the people in New York, most of the people in New York have caught the virus from people from Europe and not from China.
Right.
So it had already been through Europe to New York. So I'm saying we didn't get the word, whether we got the word, didn't get the word, whether it was whether people in the administration gave the warnings but not strong enough, who the hell knows? The fact is, if we'd have found out 4 or 5 weeks before, you would have tried to trace the people down and not sent everybody home. But once they did and realized that they were behind the curve, then the response was, well, we got to save the hospitals from overloading, and that's when they sent people home. It was never a good idea, Frank. It was just an idea to keep the hospitals to the point where they're not, they can't get overloaded. So we'll send people home, and we'll stop the growth at least enough till we get ourselves geared up in hospitals.
Catch our breath.
But it never was a good public health idea to send people home. Some of the people I talked to this weekend, you know, one of the ladies, I won't mention the school or anything, she works at this university. Well, the dean They sent people home. The dean's whole family had it because they're all in the same house. I mean, so I guess evidently the guy, and this is the way it's worked out for most people, he did not have to be hospitalized, from what I understand. He's in his 50s, but he had a reasonably tough few days and a 10-day slog. Wife, nowhere near as bad. Son, little bit. Daughter never even knew she had it, even though she did, which is seemingly what, you know, the way this thing is playing out. But, of course, there are some young people that have a problem. There are some older people that don't. I mean, so it's not universal, but that seems to be the drill. But you see these places like the homeless shelter here in Chicago this morning, the place everybody in the place has got it. And I don't understand how we've got empty hotels. We've got McCormick Place, which evidently doesn't have a patient yet. You know, we spent a fortune over there. I don't see, to me, you asked for a plan. I'll give you a plan, Frank. That every business or every building downtown, within 3-4 weeks, maybe even two, when we get all these tests, you can say, I will send two nurses.
Who says we're going to have these tests?
What?
I heard out of Pence's mouth twice. Once he said 4 million. 2 weeks later, he said we would have 14 million tests by the end of the week.
Well, I listen to Abbott Labs more than I do them. Where's the quick test? That's the one you want. And they claim that they're going to start. Matter of fact, my nephew's going for one this morning.
Well, so, no, I mean, is that the one that's on North Shore Medical Group?
No, well, I don't know. It came out of
$40 a shot?
No, it came out of Abbott Labs, and supposedly if you're positive, it tells you in 5 minutes, and if you're negative, it tells you in 11 minutes.
I think it's that one. Is he paying $40 for it?
Probably. His company's doing it. So I mean,
that's a good idea, but yeah. I mean, we need a national program.
I know what
moving forward, okay, we'll say what happened happened. What is. That's sort of like trading a bad market.
But
I'm going to trade this moving forward. What's our plan
frankly,
for fighting the virus?
Okay, you're asking me what my plan would be. I don't give a crap.
No, I mean what is the plan? I'm sorry, your plan, you have a plan. We have
we have
the virus.
Right,
reopening the economy.
We have the Conrad Hilton. We have two or three hotels. We have a corner place with virtually thousands of rooms.
Yes.
Now, the building we have here, it's not a very big building. We don't own it. Across the street, whatever business it is, say, okay, two nurses are showing up. We're going to take 100 people on Monday morning. You show up, you get a test. Do you have it or don't you? If you have it, you go to one of the hotels in McCormick Place. You don't go back home. If you don't have it, get your fanny up to work. And if you already had it, we're going to give you a card saying you already had it, and you get your fanny up to work. And the people who sent up to work that don't have it, we're going to come back 2 days from now. We're going to test them again. Make sure they haven't got it in the last 2 days. Because you have to separate the people. You don't send somebody who has it back home. And if somebody does have it, then you go to their house and you test all those people. Okay, you guys stay home for 10 days. And by the way, here's the doctor's number. I don't see any other way around it, Frank. Do you?
Yeah, but no, I don't. But that's a plan. We don't see a plan from our leaders. Okay, and this is a national problem now.
Well, but
for example, there's a shortage of doctors in the big cities. I miss where the Trump Towers is, and that we can't get doctors because they can't find a place.
But this is the whole hypocrisy of this whole thing. There's a shortage of doctors, yet we're laying off all the doctors and nurses in all these hospitals that do elective surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's how scary. I mean, some of these hospitals here in Chicago, like St. Joe along the lakefront. I don't think you're going to go there. Well, if you're driving by, you're not feeling good. You go there for a heart attack. But by and large, during the week, there's a massive elective surgery thing in that place. All those people are laid off. What are we doing here, Frank? We're laying people. Plus, these hospitals, up until 3 weeks ago, some of the hospitals were somebody coming in and they're taking their temperature. I said, I had an email from a lady in Ohio. She says, I went in there she's older. She listens to the show. I don't know if she found us, but once in a while I get an email from her. She goes, listen to you guys saying that this thing is contagious before you have symptoms. And yet I went to the hospital, they took my temperature, I didn't have a temperature, and they said, go right ahead. She goes, how is it you guys know it, they don't? And she goes, it makes no sense to me. And I said, it doesn't. It makes no sense. Why?
I have two cousins that are heads of nursing, one a regional hospital and another one a major regional university teaching hospital. They both said that they send people home because they didn't have tests. They'll say, no, you don't qualify, but what they meant was, no, we don't have any tests.
Right. Well, and they you know, I think everybody universally says because the whoever was the FDA or the CDC basically put us 5 weeks behind in a test. I don't think anybody doubts that.
Once the FDA and once the CDC, I don't know how they work together. That seems to be problematic, that working relationship.
Well, there was one article, when we were flying by, how whatever happened, all the people that were trying to make tests, they made it more difficult for them to make them than less. Because they had to go...
And everybody has a different machine to do it. Well, so if you don't have the machine, you can't do the five-minute one. I mean, it is... it's a cluster.
Well, but I was, you know, this is so weird, Frank. There was a guy, I'm sure he's still alive, in Toronto. And I don't know if you've ever had a suspicion of a heart attack before. Anybody who has knows the first thing they do is draw blood, and they send the blood someplace, and 4 or 5 hours later, or however long it takes, they get back and say, you have this amount of heart enzymes or don't. Because if your heart's in trouble, it lets off these enzymes. So if you don't get any enzymes back, it's probably indigestion. If you get some enzymes back, they can tell if your heart's having problems. Well, this guy, I drove up to Toronto. I mean, this is not what we do as a firm. But, you know, he was looking for investors. And actually, some of the people who were my clients had already invested in him and weren't doing so hot. So they said, would you go up and see the guy, maybe get him out? So I drive up, and of course, he's got this little machine. And it's, in the ambulance, they could give you a test and say, it wasn't quite as accurate as the other one, but so what? In the test, the guy could give you the test and say, oh man, his enzyme count is here, he's having a severe heart attack, or it's here, we don't know what it is, but it's not a heart attack. So the guy was getting nowhere, whatever happened, there was always another test, another hospital, blah, 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 to where you essentially had to have a place that gave you dual tests. His test plus the test that was already in there, and he had to use the other guy's test too, and had to pay for all that. And every time the guy got somewhere, he had to take a step back from the FDA. Then all of a sudden, one day, Merck comes in and says, "I'll tell you what, we love your product. We'll market your product along with ours, since we're into all these places anyway. They're in like a tick on a dog to all these hospitals." And he goes, "Sure." Well, a year later, they hadn't sold one of his; they just put it on the shelf. So this is the state of this industry. As much as we may think they're all idiots, I don't think they necessarily were all idiots, but every president that I've watched their campaign, from Clinton on, those are the ones I remember the most, every single one in their campaign said, we need to streamline the drug approval process and make it less onerous on the people that have new drugs. And I'm going to say every single president that was in for 4 years, at the end of the 4 years, it was more money and more time for a drug to go through. You think I'm wrong?
No. I see what's happening. I see generics that I've been taking for years.
Yeah.
In the past 3 years go from $3 for a 30-day supply to 15.
Well, that's because the person who owned it originally probably bought the generic company and was competing against them. Right?
Right. I assume that's what it is.
All right, before we can't lose you here without talking about this oil deal. Just to go back to my roots a little bit, immortal words of Milton Friedman, the hardest, of course, he made a lot of mistakes, too. He's not like he's a total guru. Well, a lot of his mistakes had reasons for him, though, Frank. You know, when he talked about whether how much money a country owes their citizens doesn't make any difference. It's all in the same house. It's like you owe on your wife, and yet the Fahey household is fine. But he didn't anticipate other countries owning all our stuff. So, I mean, a lot of stuff that he talked about, you know, was wrong. But the principles that he talked about, I think a lot of them were right. But he would talk about the hardest thing in the world to discipline is a cartel, because everybody wants to cheat, especially if you're shaving on production. I'd say since the day OPEC was started, not that they weren't, you know, pretty successful, certainly at the beginning, but they've had a cheating problem the whole way, right? So now okay. they're down to like 20-some% of the world's oil. And they're ineffective. In my mind, why we even, it's like saying there's only 85,000 cases of this thing in China. I mean, the news media loves the fact that OPEC has been a historical thing for 45 years. So we give them, we bow down and genuflect in front of them, even though they don't have any, hardly any power now. I mean, in terms of, for Saudi Arabia, it used to be that the people, and when I say power, I'll define economic power. You are a cartel or a monopolist. If you can drop the amount produced by, say, 2%, and the price goes up more than 2%, so you're a net winner, that's when you are a monopolist or a cartel or an oligopolist. If you're a, you could have a farm with four counties in Iowa and say, screw these prices, screw this government, screw these people, I'm not producing corn this year. Fine, don't. The price of corn probably goes down, what, 1/1% of 1%, if that, or it goes up. I mean, nowhere near enough. But now, these guys right now, there's no way on earth that Saudi can cut production, say, 2 million barrels out of the 12 they produce. So that's a cut of say, 18%, right? There's no way on earth that they're going to send the price of oil up 18%. So they are a net loser in everything they do here, because they're not powerful enough anymore. Am I right or not?
You're exactly right.
So they do this, and now all of a sudden, the reason why the oil is where it is because how much have you driven lately? I'm still driving to work, but I don't drive anywhere else. My 42-gallon tank, I'm 3 weeks be having to go to the gas station now. I used to be every week.
I paid $1.70 for a gallon yesterday.
Yeah. Which is still kind of high with RBOB 65. With RBOB 65 cents, that's pretty high. Of course, Illinois, with all our taxes and everything. I'm surprised the governor doesn't find a way to, since price is low, to raise taxes again. We better not say that. They're liable to have forgot it and done it. But anyway, I don't. What do you think, without being...
Do you think Putin will cheat?
Oh, God, yeah. If you... They all. I mean, the only one probably who doesn't is Saudi, because they're you know, they try and, you know, be the leader of this group or whatever they are.
I mean, they don't need a cash flow to service their business. Our frackers do, or, you know, whoever the U.S. producers are need that cash flow to keep the businesses alive.
Yeah, but Saudi's got a country that nobody works. And how many people are on the dole in the family from the oil business? How many people, what is it, the 12th cousin gets like 30 grand a year or something? If you're the first cousin, you get a jet? What do you think that happens to those people when all the dole stops? I mean, even Caesar couldn't stop the dole, right?
No.
Anyway, what, if the actually, we had some, I'm going to dig these out, but we had some pretty good, how much time we got with you, Frank? We only got 2 minutes. I'll have to go over these with Jen. We had some pretty interesting questions from people. One of them, I'll just get your opinion. A gentleman from Australia wrote in and said, why doesn't the Fed just buy up all the Fed's bonds? And I'm like, that way the government wouldn't have any debt. And I said, well, what do you think? I mean, what do you think of that? Why? I mean, right now, what they're doing, why shouldn't somebody ask that question, to be honest with you?
Right. They'd rather sell them and get the cash flow. Remember? We'll cheat.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is the...
I know.
I mean, if you do that, then you're back to a system where if the president or Congress wants to spend money, they just print it and send it and sell it. We're trying to be out of that system, but we're back in it, pretty much, aren't we?
Bigly.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we just forgive all student loans and then declare bankruptcy? It's not like we won't have credit starting up on day one.
Well, we would have... Who's going to declare bankruptcy? Us? The company?
The country. I mean, they're talking about it, you know. Who cares about a default if you're the biggest? Screw you.
I think that would be a problem.
Oh, of course it would be a problem, but it's same line of thought.
Well,
how do we game the system to our benefit?
Well, I think we are doing that. But the thing that concerns me, Frank, is even the people who listen to the show. I mean, we talk about it. I mean, Carl talks about it. Kevin, to a certain extent, and you do. I don't think the lion's share of the populace understands how this two-step is working, how they are just printing money. I mean, as much as you get you'd be happy to get your $1,300 check in the mail, which, of course, doesn't look like anybody's getting anytime soon, not to mention these small business loans. How many billion do they say they're doing every day? There hasn't been, not one of those things has gone on. Unless there's some
it
bank...
It comes with a test.
Yeah, well, unless some bank in Washington is pounding them out to people's friends, because nobody's gotten one here that I know of. I mean, I've talked about people at six different banks. So, anywho. All right, Frank, is there any chance we are back to normal by June 1st? I'm thinking no.
I don't think so. I can't see us going ahead on May 1st right now. We don't have a plan. I'll support a plan. At least tell me what's happening. It's the unknown that messes with us.
Well, that's right. Anyway, all right, take care of yourself. Hey, I'll probably have you later in the week. S&P Futures, where are we here? I got to get through. I've been doing all this stuff, reading all these emails. S&P Futures are down 21. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Right now.
Global North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. S&P futures down 1650. We've come back. We were like 30 on the way in. NASDAQ futures down 36. They were down 70-something. Dow down 169. It was down over 300. So we're coming back quite a bit. Individual stocks, they're not moving too much. Caterpillar down 295. Boeing's actually up $3. The oil stocks that we would be concerned about, XOM is up $1, and we got Chevron up $1.44. So a little bit of bounce up in the oil stocks. So is obviously the big, if you believe it, 10% oil cut agreed to between, they call it OPEC Plus, what that means, Russia in there too. I don't know, I'm one of those, I believe it when I see it. I don't think those guys have any power, but they like to head off to Vienna and drink booze that they're not supposed to, and the hookers are not supposed to. I'm just saying. Probably a horrible thing to say, but just saying. Around the rest of the world, Europe, everything is, I think they're closed today for Boxing Day, or not Boxing Day, Boxing Day is after Christmas, Easter Monday. Over Nikkei is down 455, 2.3%, Shanghai down 13.5%, Hang Seng up 329, 1.4%. Bonds, 10-year, 0.72, so that's unchanged. The Bund, minus 0.34. Japan is right at flat, 0.003 positive. So I guess they're positive, but call it flat. Oil only up 22 cents, 22.98. So before this historic deal was signed, it was 27 last week. So it's down like $4 from last week. Brent up 16 cents, 31.54. Natural gas, 177. RBOB, 69 cents. Gold, which had a huge run up on Friday, is down $11, 17.41. So it's up there. Silver, 15.66. Copper, 234. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and I'll do the sports because one of my favorite Cubs of all time died.
Good morning, my friends. I hope you all had a great Easter weekend. In the weather, we're having 35 degrees currently in Chicago, pretty cold, feeling like winter than spring today, actually. Decreasing cloudiness and windy weather is expected today. Winds could occasionally gust over 40 miles per hour. Zero chances of precipitation today. The highest of the day is 44 and the lowest 30. 60 degrees currently in Phoenix. Might get cloudy throughout the day, but overall clear and warm day. The highest is 78 and the lowest 57. No traffic right now. No accidents reported. Clear, no delays in Chicago City. Chip.
The news from the sports world today is obviously longtime Cub favorite and fan favorite, Glenn Beckert, died, I believe, at 79. It's a shame. I really like Glenn. He was on the Cubs from 65 to 75. Had some pretty standout years. It was an all-star, I think, four times. John, you here with us?
I am, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Little bit of a story here is that the Cubs brought up a second baseman named Kenny Hubbs, and he had I think he was Rookie of the Year, 1962. Him and Billy Williams were 2 years in a row. If he was 62 and Billy Williams was 63 or whatever, and Kenny Hubbs set the then record for chances without an error, and then he, between his sophomore and junior year, his second and third year, died in an airplane crash. So I think the Cubs went 1 or 2 years hacking around looking for a second baseman, and all of a sudden Glenn Beckert showed up, and in his first year, 1965, at age 24, played 154 games. So that's a lot your first year, huh, Jen?
Yeah, I'll say.
And he only hit 239, but next year was 287, and 280, 291, 288, 342 in 1971. So a serious guy. And a very good second baseman. Kenny Hubbs, Hubbs was in a class by himself, defensively. He was right up there with Maz and a few other people, but, Glenn Beckert was very adequate, and he was a good hitter, and he was when you talk about second hitters in the lineup, he was quintessential second hitter.
Yeah.
He hit almost 300, where if somebody was on first, stole second, he'd hit behind the runner, those kinds of things, and the lineup was Dan Kessinger, Beckert, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, Ernie Banks. And so three of those people were in the Hall of Fame. That's pretty good, huh, Jen?
Yeah, that's when the Cubs were the Cubs. I mean,
yeah.
the team that you, kind of storied history before it evolved into a, mega business like so many other teams, but that's when they had real charisma and a really devoted following. And it, you know, going to a game then is so different from going to a game now.
Oh, yeah,
can't
yeah.
really compare
yeah.
the two. But, those were wonderful times. You know, I was a Sox fan, but I still, you know, basked in the 69 Cubs glory because that was it had been a long, dry stretch for them.
I was there on opening day.
Were you?
Yeah. 69. All the way from the South Side at age 17.
Boy, yeah.
And I don't know how the hell I got off school. Or was that like in a... Is that a Good Friday or something? Because I don't think I skipped school whenever I was there.
Could be, because, well, the opening day was later then.
Well, there's Easter's in April.
Well, that's true, yeah.
It was something, because I know I didn't bail. I mean, my mother would never allow that to happen.
Yeah, that was never an option for
no, that
me
was
either.
Plus, at Marist, for God's sake, they'd throw you out. I mean, it was like... Yep. I mean, if you just didn't show, I mean, I can only imagine, for God's sake, that was my team, and that was got the Cubs where they became where Channel 9 did the Continental first they did the Continental Cubs Broadcasting Network where they I'm gonna say 20 games a year they somehow without satellites hooked up by it must have cost them a fortune, Chan. They hooked up by phone lines, and they did some games around the country during the year. And once there was a satellite, then they went to all 162 games on the Cubs Broadcasting Network. And that's why the Cubs, and if you're sitting in a bar in Oklahoma at 2 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, you're watching a Cubs game.
Right.
Everybody else is at night. And so the combination of day baseball and all around the country made them, you know, that's who you watched in the middle of the day. You came home from school, you watched the Cubs. Or actually the Sox. I watched the Sox more in the afternoon than I did at night because, I mean, at night you're doing homework and stuff. But I mean, that was my team. I mean, I knew every player. We watched every game. It was, and all the way through college, I mean, we would watch. We'd get on to Billy Hake and I would head down to Samaria's and watch the game because you could get the scrambly black and white from Chicago if you were had the big antenna in the bar. So we would watch the Bulls. So, remember that place? We would watch the Bulls and we watched the Hawks. We were down there three nights a week. It was $1.35 for a pitcher of Drury's and 59 cents for a great meatball sandwich.
Drury's. Now, when was the last time I heard that?
That was a South Bend beer, wasn't it? It was pretty good.
Oh yeah, I had a few Drury's in my life. I can't remember the last time I saw it in a liquor store on a bar menu.
Oh, they've been out
a while.
A couple of knuckleheads at work here actually think that these guys care about the old beer, you know, the old beer recipe, where if you go buy a Pabst now, which the Pabst Brewing Company has been closed for 40 years, and you're actually getting a Pabst. You're getting a can that says Pabst.
Well, they still have the Blue Ribbon part of their name from the 1893 Columbian Exposition, and that, I don't think that formula has been made anywhere, probably for 40 years. So.
Well, yeah, because when Schlitz was reintroduced 3-4 years ago, didn't they actually make an attempt to? Somebody allegedly found the original Schlitz recipe.
Yeah, I read that at the time, and I didn't have any kind of Schlitz was around our house when I was growing up. There were a couple of Schlitz drinkers in my family, so I'd sample it when I was a kid. I'd go around and get the dregs of some of the Schlitzes that were left sitting in the living room while everybody was going out to the dinner table, but I couldn't tell you enough about what had changed from the old Schlitz to the new Schlitz, but it did make a resurgence, and I think they did try to match whatever the formula had been.
Well, they changed the formula without telling people, and all of a sudden people didn't like it. And Schlitz went from being... Budweiser went on strike when we were in college, and Schlitz ended up with something like... Something like 9 or 11% of the entire market was Schlitz, which is pretty high. By the way, did you ever come to our happy hours junior year?
Oh, God, yeah. I rolled a couple kegs across the campus with you.
Well, those were all Schlitz.
That's right. You're right, Tom.
We had the Schlitz Dark.
Oh, yeah, those were... You have to jog my memory. That's how much I remember the happy hours.
All right, we got a couple of questions from... A couple of people, and they're actually really good ones, John. So I'll save this. I'm going to read them all the way here because these guys are serious listeners. Big fan of the show, and this is dangerous. I have a question for the chief and the Stocks and Jocks Brain Trust. I guess that's you.
I'm honored.
What keeps the Fed from simply forgiving all or at least most of the debt they have on the balance sheets? It might be unfair to the unforgiven, but then the forgiven debtors would be free from having to pay off debt that focuses the remaining debt. The other outstanding debt, mutual funds, teachers, pension funds, etc., would even become more valuable. Since the Fed creates money out of thin air, does it not really cost them anything either? Is it a question of inflation? I graduated from the University of Florida in 1987. I've asked my friends and were economists, and they don't have a credible answer. Actually, I've not even gotten a response. I was a lowly poli-sci grad, so perhaps I could not understand. However, I'm hoping the Notre Dame grads can come through and provide me with a good explanation. Regardless, thanks, Tony from Wisconsin. So, I'm going to say when the Fed goes out and buys stuff, the charter usually is, okay, that they maneuver the money supply by buying federal paper. And I don't know when the charter, you know, changed or whether they got all this other power, but they would essentially go out, and if all of a sudden the federal funds rate were getting a little too hot, they would go out and they would sell. Well, first they would buy, you know, because they needed a balance sheet of some kind. But they would buy. Then when they had money to the system, they'd go out and they'd buy, you know, $1 million worth of T-bills. So now the $1 million comes out of nowhere. That's the truth. The T-bills now go on the balance sheet of the Fed. Okay, so the Fed adds $1 million to the economy. That goes in the bank. The bank says, okay, wow, I got another $1 million here, so I can lend out. If your reserve requirement's 20, I can lend out 80. 80%, which is $800,000, I can lend it to John Flanagan. So John Flanagan says, okay, I now got $100,000 loan, but I'm going to put it right back in the same bank, right? This is where the multiplier effect comes from. Then the bank turns around and they can now loan another 640. They lend that to me, to the chief, and I put it back in the bank. And then they can lend out whatever 20% of 640 is. So you get this multiplier effect. So you don't have to do a real, real lot of dough because of this multiplier thing. And so then the Fed says, oh no, we got too much. Now we're going to go out and we're going to sell some of these bonds or bills we have on the thing, and we're going to take some of this money out of the system. It works the same way. So the Fed's real job, when they say we're going to have a Fed funds rate of say 3%, I'll say normal 3%, to maintain it at 3% is not all that easy, because banks and the way our system is set up, every bank can create money. Because if I walk in and deposit, well, maybe one of these, used to be, maybe I could do something like this. It dropped $1 million in a bank, and all of a sudden it's sitting there. Jan Flanagan walks in and says, I got this plumbing company. How about lending me $100,000 for 2 new trucks? Business is good. And they go, fine, here you go. Well, now you take the $100,000 and you put it in a checking account. Well, how much money is there now, Jan?
Well, it's not the same.
It's $1 million. It's $1,000,001. Because I can still write a check for my $1 million, and you can write a check for your $100,000, right?
Right.
So our system, the Fed has to constantly maintain this. Well, once we get into this crap they're doing now they start putting it, well, that's not enough. We can't just go out and do, there's not enough inventory of U.S. bills and T-bills, plus some of them are owned by the Chinese and the Japanese and the Saudis and God knows who else, the Irish. And so our inventory is not high enough. So they say, oh, no, we're going to buy mortgages. Okay, but now what the Fed does, they have this T-bill sitting on the books that actually is earning 3%. So they're actually making money on this. Well, anybody can make money if you can buy something for free, right? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you borrow money for free, anything you bought and earn interest on, by definition, you're making money. So they, after their expenses, return that money back to the Treasury. So you always hear this big number at the end of the year where the Fed goes, Fed returned $180 billion to the federal government. You know, whoopee. Which is whoopee to a certain extent, except that it's not too hard to earn interest on money when you don't have to pay any interest on the money you just created, correct?
Yeah.
So, the idea is, to a certain extent, now what is the price? I'm going to make this question more than Tony wants it to be here. Well, then they go out and buy mortgages. And you're going to say, all right, now wait a minute. How much are they paying for these mortgages? To this day, nobody will tell you, John. To this day. Now, are they worth 65 cents on the buck if that group of 1,000 mortgages have a few of them with weeds in them, where the people haven't been there in a year? Are they all, paying every day, every month? I doubt it. So let's say the basket's worth $0.75. This is after 2008. And they go in and they pay 95 cents or 90 or maybe even, God help us, 100 cents on the buck. Well, to a certain extent, they already have written off somebody's loan, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, the bank is, they're getting 100 cents. The poor bastard used to live in a house. He's still gone. He didn't get a dime of that, did he?
No.
Right? So.
But, you know, the thing, I don't know if it's just because it you know, to put that into practice means that we really have run out of any other somewhat more traditional options to fix a broken system. And if whatever might actually flow from that isn't so much, you know, a monetary problem as it is some, you know, an emotional problem for the markets or for allies overseas or industries across the globe. Does it look like we've really, you know, we're starting to run on empty and admitting it? So I don't know. I mean, in a way, it doesn't seem any stranger than what we're doing now, that's for sure.
Well, here's the answer to Tony, I think, which I think is the answer, Jan, but if not, you tell me. I think the answer is, if you went and only, if the problem was a liquidity problem and there wasn't enough cash in the system, but the debt was all good, I ask yourself, would there really be a liquidity problem if the debt was all good? That's another, let's not go there, but let's just say the debt is all good. So if JP Morgan Chase has a loan demand and they're trying to get out loans to people and they just can't do it because they're bogged down in this mortgage situation. If the Fed went in and bought 500 mortgages where nobody has missed a payment, the house is all matched, they still appraise out for the money, and you go and buy those mortgages from these guys at, you know, 99 cents on the dollar or 100 cents on the buck, and you just provide liquidity to the bank. Okay, you took cash, you can now go lend to somebody, you took these assets that are 30-year assets off your books. That's one thing. Okay, Tony, I hope I'm not making this worse for you. That's one thing. But if you go in and you know that a few of the people have dashed, a few people are foreclosing, that the number is 75, and you decide you're going to pay 100, you already have forgiven 25% of the loans, haven't you?
Right, right.
So the question is, how do you forgive them? Now, of course, now somebody says, well, this mortgage was for 175. The people haven't been there for 2 years. It's a short sale. Somebody wants to pay you 100. Do you take it? And if the answer is yes, now, of course, they're not calling the Fed for this. They got some service person in the middle they're paying a fortune to. If you say yes, well, then again, you have, again, now, they've forgiven, right?
Yes, yes.
So my answer to Tony is, I don't know why people can't answer this question. The question is, they're doing it all the time. Right, but most of the time, if they forgive the debt, they're forgiving the debt of the federal government, because that's the one they mostly own, right? So they're never going to do that. Why would you do that?
Well, and only because it reached sort of cataclysmic proportions back in 2007 and 2008, where the entire housing industry collapsed, really, because this was so rampant. And I think, in and of itself, it isn't that unusual phenomenon for this stuff to be written off this way. But when everything is suspect, and all the checks in, all, you know, the appraisal industry has been corrupted, and, you know, the lending industry has no particular concern with quality loans, or they don't care. There's just going to be for the next person sitting at this desk to worry about. Then you've got real trouble, and we've been down that road. So, in short, you know, short focus, really, I think it's not that bad a thing. And as you say, we're doing it now. We probably always have been doing it. But the only business you're doing, you got trouble.
I'll bet before 2009, you never had, never is a long time, but I'm going to say rarely or never had the Fed go buy specific fixed assets that weren't government bonds that may have been wobbly. I mean, if the credit market and corporate bonds say there's no liquidity, all of a sudden, like right now, okay, there's not a whole lot of liquidity because a lot of people don't have a lot of money. So if there's a problem in the bond market, all right, and say for instance, General Motors bonds are now trading. As a matter of fact, Boeing, I was I reported last week that one of the days before this bailout was announced, Boeing bonds were 60 bid at 80. All right, now, if you're absolutely convinced that Boeing is as stout a soldier as there's going to be, and these bonds are absolutely true blue, I don't know that if the Fed goes in and says, well, we're 90-cent bid for these things, because if all of a sudden nobody can sell them and he needs the cash, we'll provide, quote, liquidity. All right, now that's the question. Are you providing liquidity? Are these Boeing bonds true blue? All right, then the question is, if they're not, and you just paid 90 and next week the price is 70, you just bailed somebody out, right?
Yes, that's right.
So the question is there ever a pure time when all the paper is good as gold and there's just a liquidity problem, or are you always bailing somebody out whenever you do something like this?
I think now you're always doing it.
Yeah, now you're always doing it. Well, I was just about to say, I think the Boeing stuff is all right. I don't know if we're doing this dance right now with 48 people flying every day, that anybody's ever going to want a new jet a year from now, and I don't know, even Boeing can withstand that.
This just, you know, it's going to take years for this kind of slack period to work its way out in selling airline tickets and in building aircraft. I see this as just such a violent stop to everything that we've, you know, it's easy to engineer a shutdown like this, but how you coax it back into operation and get it running again where it's humming along, nobody seems to know what that looks like or when it's going to happen or how it would happen. And it's not just the airline industry, it's pretty much everything else now. And we're making it up as we go along, which is never a good idea, but it's a particularly bad idea when the entire economy is in disarray. So,
but here's the thing.
We haven't seen something like this. I mean, the Depression was different in 1929, very different from this. We've engineered this. We've created this. And we've just come to a screeching halt, whereas that you know, grew over 3 or 4 years and got progressively worse. Now we're seeing, you know, the end result of that period happening within a 3 or 4 week span, which is just...
But somewhere, Jan, I don't know if you're listening when I was out, we need some kind of a plan. I mentioned earlier that one of our friends, a friend of yours as well, I talked to her and she was saying that the dean at her college had, you know, they sent everybody home, right? So, of course, everybody in the house got it, which has been my problem with it the whole way. As long as people are out of sight, out of mind, you don't care about them, right? The 50-year-old male, 50-ish, late 50s, did not have to go to the hospital, had a couple of bad days, and it was a slog. It was not something you'd volunteer to do. Wife, not as bad. Son, very little symptoms, and a 14-year-old daughter, virtually none. They all tested, they all had it. Now they don't have it. Well, somewhere along the line, these guys should get a medal that goes around their neck and says, hey, I get a flight to Florida for 20% on the dollar. We should go. School's not open anyway. Let's go. And oh, by the way, we should be able to go out on the beach. And we should have a restaurant we can go to. I mean when you start having, I think, John, we're going to find that there's literally millions of people that have had this.
Well, I just read this morning that, you know, the Roseland Community Hospital out in the south side is doing testing, you know, drive-through and people lining up. And they give you a nasal swab and a blood test. And this is just anecdotal, and they haven't published any results yet, but the phlebotomist there was interviewed about what results she was seeing. And numbers indicate 30 to 50% of the people tested have had the disease, have highly developed antibodies, which means they had the disease some time ago. And 10 to 20% of the people they're testing actually have the active virus.
Right.
This would indicate that there was a lot more people walking around with the disease long before there was stay at home or, you know, mask wearing or anything else. So we've been dealing with this longer than we realized. And as you say, many, many people have had it and recovered and, you know, never had symptoms, nothing maybe at all. So what are we dealing with now? Yeah, there are people who have the virus, but the people who had it and recovered were probably stretching back to the first of the year. So that kind of throws everything out the window.
You know what
they're doing now.
For the various people that are on this show, and obviously you're a very member of that group, if you could summarize what everybody says here. We've got a couple outliers, maybe. But from Carl on down, and I've probably been the guy most in the middle, I was absolutely convinced from day one that we missed this thing, and I've got letters from people saying they had it, parents had it, doctors in the rural areas saying, I don't know what this guy had, but it sure sounds like it was this. It was in, like, December. I think we were 12 weeks behind, and we're still 12 weeks behind, and we need to act accordingly, which means if we'd have done the go-home part, we're 10 weeks late with that. So when we did it, I think we did more harm than good, to be honest with you.
Right. We increased contagiousness by putting all these people out of their normal, and locking them pretty much indoors. So,
but now if
what do we think will happen?
If the tests show what you just said, and I think they might, well, then we need a plan for that. Why are we closed down? There should be one out of five bars should be open. If you got a little pledge, say, I already had it, you should be able to go in and drink.
Well, if it were my decision, I'd say, a week to 2 weeks from now, we're back to as normal as we can be, given the fact that we're going to have to still monitor cases and see what happens as people do return to a normal life. But whether we open the floodgates and say everybody go back to work in the health care industry, everybody go back to work in the food industry, we open restaurants in these zip codes, we open garden centers or whatever in particular places and study those, I just don't see logistically how you can do that without creating a boondoggle and delaying this endlessly. So I think it's going to have to be pretty much rolled out over a two-week period, and they should be starting now.
So you didn't like my plan earlier. My plan was everybody gets 100 people show up at their work, you test them, you got it, you go to McCormick Place until you don't have it, because there's nobody's using the beds over there anyway. If you don't have it, go to work, we'll test you more in 2 days again.
We scrub down your desk and your chair, and there's your phone just as it always was. It's been disinfected. Get to work.
And if you already had it, I got to believe that despite all the weird horror stories you think, these buildings that have been closed for 2 and 3 weeks, nothing's alive in there. Anyway, SP Futures down
50. That's one thing I thought, too, that it will be kind of an opportunity to do certainly a cleaning, but there hasn't been any kind of opportunity for this stuff to get...
SP Futures down 15. We'll worry about this after the break, John. NASDAQ Futures down 35. We were down twice that much, so we've come back halfway. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities, as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up at Stocks and Jocks, not time how? Mr. Jan Flanagan, she's AV on the board, so SP Futures down 15 now, we're leaking a little bit. We were down 30 when we came in, though, so we're about halfway back. NASDAQ futures down 39.50. So, Jan, usually our girl AV is all dressed for yoga and everything, and now obviously the yoga is canceled. So today she's all dressed in black. What do you suppose that's all about?
I don't know. Earlier, I wished her happy Easter, not realizing that Angelica's Easter has yet to happen because they're on the Julian calendar in Orthodox Church. So we get to have another Easter.
Well, I have to say it has nothing to do with the latest tendencies. And also, yoga is not canceled.
Well, the yoga place is still open?
Well, I kind of open my own on the sun deck.
Ah.
On my building.
Well, you're going to be rough today. It's windy as hell and it's cold. I don't think you're going to get too big of a class today.
Well, we'll see.
It makes me nervous when have you ever watched The Natural, which I'm sure you haven't? The lady who shot Roy Hobbs was the woman in black, right?
Yeah.
So you're always a little nervous to see somebody.
Thank God I have no idea what you're talking about.
you think we could make her watch The Natural?
I think so. It's Robert Redford. So
it's true. Robert Redford. Plus, Wilford Brimley was always my favorite. He was spectacular in Absence of Malice, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God damn it, when I leave this place, somebody's ass is going to be in my briefcase. Or something along those lines. Didn't he play, he played what's-his-name in All the President's Men? Senator Irvin, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah, he has his cameo role, yeah.
Yeah.
Fresh out of the hearings, He'd become a true star after Watergate, boy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Jan, you've seen some of this. I saw some of this when I was on the board of the SIBO. When you actually go after somebody who has power, it's really hard to do. Now, you can, if you're in the... If you're in our industry, you can take a firm the size of PTI and you can basically bleep with them as much as you want, right? Because they have no power. The regulators just love toying with people. But if you're big enough, the regulators are afraid of you because if you're wrong, it could mean your job, right? So you don't get a whole lot of, and as you know, it's been kind of growing by the day. We have all kinds of people on the show that are willing to put blame on government for this whole mess. And we have other people that defend them, because they happen to be in that group or whatever. But I don't think anybody, or even the people that defend them say that, Obama's group screwed up. Because nobody can really defend the performance of government since day one here, I don't think. But having said that, that's not where I'm going here. Where I'm going is that I honestly believe, Jen, and I'm more and more believing it by the day in this email I'm about to read, I think these business people knew all about this from October. And either they bent over and spread them for the people in China and didn't tell people about them here, or didn't tell our government. They never, or, you know, Tim Cook, with his bosom buddy relationship with Trump, never picked up the phone and said, "Hey, Prez, this is bad over here. We're stopping all our people coming over here, and you should do it for other people." I don't think any of those people helped him out at all. And you know what? I think there's serious guilt here, and we'll never get to it. And one of these days, I'm not this law and order person where you spend all day long finding out where the bad people are. But once in a while, John, you got to do it. And I'm wondering if this isn't one of those times. This guy is from down under. I will not use his name. So he's from Australia. We have all kinds of people, obviously, listen to the show. Cannot express enough my gratitude for your show. The only guy I don't like is that champ. No, he didn't say that. It is truly a perfect balance of discussions and scientific issues, legalities, and politics and such stuff. My opinion is simply that there is war, such lax, that's too kind, rather sheer disregard, possibly negligence, on the part of the gatekeepers at the borders. Well before the news reached crisis point, but certainly when it was speculated, our main airline, Qantas, took no action, letting people into Australia, but of course it's not their problem, it's the federal government's. The CEO of Qantas earned $23 million last year, and the most we've heard of him is that their staff, who's been laid off, could work stacking shelves at the supermarket. And they hope to be bailed out by government. All the focus is on the cruise ships, which are a blight on the planet anyway. But Qantas took no action at the airports to check temperatures, improve quarantine, issue masks, stipulate special distance, make in-flight announcements, or increase disinfectant measures. At the ports, the cruise ship's owners were wheeling out people in hospital beds in the middle of the night under the cover of darkness while letting everyone else out on the street without even passport checks. These CEOs take no due diligence, or they did not do any research into potential circumstances, take any initiative. Some years ago, I'm sure that when I walked through the gates after arriving in Africa, there were disinfected mist sprayed on anybody who walked through the gates into the terminal. Because what is with these people? They have no responsibility anywhere for all the money they make. You know what, Jan? He's not wrong. He is not wrong.
Not at all. And it's all the backpedaling that we're seeing now is, you know, people in business and in government, local, you know, to national, and if you include the WHO and the UN, international, nobody wants to take the hit for having been either too slow or too quick or too wrong about any of this stuff. So it's tossing around this hot potato, and nobody is capable, really, of being so aware of what was going on to have said back in September, October, whatever, however long ago this happened, you know, in the first cases, to say, boy, this is something, if we don't do this within the next 2 weeks, we are, you know, cooked for the next 6 months, and we're going to have outrageous numbers that nobody will want. There's absolutely no mechanism for that kind of clampdown. And then you get people who are just in it to make money. They'll let somebody else worry about, you know, you tell me what to do and I'll do it, but I'm not taking the heat. You know, if that's the wrong decision, I'll be back to snipe at you for having given me wrong advice. There is absolutely no accountability all the way through. So this is just, it's maddening to watch. And I agree with you that many people must have known far earlier than they have ever let on, and it's in their interest to shut up about it and not, you know, it's a question of what did they know and when did they know it. That would be a pretty damning scenario for a lot of people, I think.
Well, John, when I was, you and I were the same age, and I can remember the first time I used the phone. God knows how old it must have been. My grandmother was still at 62nd and Wallace, for God's sake. We're the only white people in the whole neighborhood. Which I didn't find, I had no problem with, by the way. It was, you know, I had no issue with that whatsoever. But it was not like today where we're shooting people. Anyway, I remember my first time that I used the phone, the operator answered and you told her the number. I don't know if you ever
had before, that. Not everybody had dial phones.
Right, we didn't have a dial phone. I don't think they had a party line. They had a, how exactly did a party line work?
Well, my mother had one, I think, you know, around World War II or so, or, you know, post-depression probably, but, you know, you could have them up until, I think, probably the 50s or 60s,
yeah,
even in Chicago. And it would, you know, you'd pick up the phone and you'd hear a conversation in progress. I think the phone rang whenever that number was called, and, I don't think you necessarily had the same phone number, although that could be
no,
wrong.
No, you did not have the same phone number, I don't believe. So, but I don't know how the hell you shared the... And I'd love to... I don't know how that even worked. It seemed like it would be more problems than just having your own line.
Right, well, and you couldn't make a call if the line was in use.
Right.
You know, if somebody, you could hear the entire conversation. if you kept your, breath down and covered the mouthpiece, if you wanted to spy on these people, it's like an unauthorized wiretap. But that's why, I mean, it was cheap, much cheaper than having a private line,
But you still had to be...
Unless you didn't have any idea who you were sharing the line with is the problem.
Well, every line had a spot in the big thing in the local 18.
In exchange, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you had your line went into place. So there was no shared, like a fiber optic where, a thousand conversations going on the same line at the same time. It was a one per line.
My mother's mother worked at the B board, which was for outgoing calls. At 63rd and Cottage Grove for Illinois Bell Telephone. She did that for years. And it was just mad, plugging stuff in, plugging it out, looking for lit up lights, listening to the number that was, you were trying to reach. And it would be, she was like, hustling the entire work shift. And, I can't imagine doing that. It was all purely mechanical.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely nothing automated about it at all.
But I don't, and now we fast forward to this world that everybody thinks, especially people like AV, these younger people, that everything is right at the tip of everybody's fingers. That you couldn't sit on a bad story if you wanted to, right? That, everything gets out. The stupid Secretary of the Navy guy who was giving a speech to people didn't think anybody was going to, tape the speech. I mean, how exactly, John, in this world with 400,000 people flying back between the U.S. and China, not anywhere else. How many? So it has to be, if you add everybody else together, it's got to be a million. With all this going on, with bodies going out in the street there, and the cab driver telling, or the Uber driver telling Greg how bad it was over there, how in God's name do you keep this under a rug for 7 to 8 weeks without an awful lot of people being involved or afraid to say something or something? I can't even imagine that in today's world. If you went out and farted in the middle of the street, it's on somebody's tweet.
Or security camera.
Yeah, or a security camera. How the hell do you keep this under the rug for 7 weeks to the point where every disease control, the president, everybody all of a sudden feels like they had jumped on it in March when it was going on in October?
Well, we're kind of led to believe that in this digital age with the internet and nonstop videos being thrown at us and the security camera footage and everything, that this can't happen, that you can't sequester anything of this magnitude. And clearly, to me it shows that globalization and this digital age, hoopla, is oversold and it's kind of a myth. Clearly, if the bigger stories are the easiest ones to cover up or explain away or ignore. There is no way of kind of making people realize at a big enough level that we're dealing with a pandemic. I mean, it only comes about when the cat gets let out of the bag in some, unexpected way, pretty much. Nobody is responsive to say, I want to get ahead of this and we're going to, announce this today and look at the WHO, for God's sake. I mean, this is kind of what they're supposed to be about. And the guy heading it isn't even a medical doctor. I wouldn't ask his advice on, taking cough syrup. So this is what we've kind of entrusted these issues. And you got a business community that just wants to be left standing at the end of this, so nobody is going to be ahead of the curve.
But, Jan, we're in a world where if somebody, I don't know why, if somebody's at the playground and they crack their kid on the ass, it's national news. And yet somehow or another, we got intelligent people getting on planes from an area where everybody's sick and coming back here and then knowing the people from their business is flying back the next day and not saying anything. I mean, for God's sake, are we that afraid of the Chinese? Is this all because of the almighty dollar? I mean, the more I think about this weekend, being in jail basically 3 days, I'm thinking, how every little thing that anybody does here, no matter what it is, if you're smoking out in front of your car, it's on somebody's... thing. I don't smoke. But I'm saying, what I'm talking about. You'd be smoking weed. I don't know that either, but I'm not saying that other people on the show don't. But how is it that people would keep quiet about that and then come back and complain to their school board about somebody in the playground? I mean, we're not talking. How do you keep quiet about something like, I mean, these business people? There had to be people that saw people sick over there or heard about people sick over there, got on a plane, and tomorrow know that Joe just got back and John's flying over tomorrow, never said anything to John and just kept their mouth shut. How could we do that? How could we possibly do that? Is there a special place in hell for these people or what?
Well, you know, I have to believe that, you know, in Davos, Switzerland, this was talked about. It has to have been.
Sure.
And for all we know, I mean, this is where the policy about what we don't say, or and you better not say this, or you will be discredited and run through the mill and, or killed, worse yet, if this gets out any sooner than it has to. And it shows really how tight-lipped a world we live in when it comes to power and money, that, you know, safety, public health, whatever, those are way down list of things to worry about. Other stuff is always going to trump that, and I think it's sad now that we're really dealing with inaction. But to me, it's kind of like it's obviously been coordinated inaction.
Yeah,
and it can't be just that nobody was paying attention. People were paying attention how not to divulge this stuff.
Right, which is how did it, just simple stuff. I mean, when I was a little younger, I used to love to ski. I'd go two times a year for a week or a long weekend. And everything I hear now, and of course you hear, this has been swept under the rug, is that the ski resorts were an absolute cesspool for this stuff. And I know you know he's your man, but goofball Trump is on the air one day talking about we got to stop people at the border because they're all diseased. The next day, I'm at home and I kick up the machine and I'm digging through this stuff. I see this huge article where all the people in Mexico are pissed off, but how many people in Mexico that have money came here to ski, and they all came back, and they all got the disease. The same day, Trump's accusing the people picking strawberries of having it. Meanwhile, we're giving it to all their wealthy. I got to say, net, we gave the disease to more Mexicans than gave it to us, by far.
It's entirely possible. What bothers me, too, and I have absolutely no evidence for this, so it's just a suspicion I've come up with, thinking like you do over the weekend when you got nothing else to do but kind of wonder about this stuff, is that the number of world leaders or spouses of world leaders who, you know, were infected, were ill, in Boris Johnson's case, hospitalized, self-quarantined. I really have to believe that there was some kind of strategic passing on of this virus at some level in some sort of sequence to either get maximum publicity or maximum fear or maximum business blowback. I can't say who would do that or who would be capable of it, but as you and I seem to be suggesting, somewhere there is power to control the news this stuff.
This
and
is
if
so
you can
weird.
Control the news about it, you can control the contamination too. So could this be an economic tool that the Chinese have got maximum effect against the U.S. in retaliation for the tariffs, or as a way of leavening the playing field and killing the stock market, you know, boom? Is this all about money, even the way the disease has progressed?
Is the
disease itself about money, too? I don't know.
John, I've read enough to where I'm absolutely convinced, even though some of my extreme right-wing friends aren't, that this was not a biological weapon. But that doesn't mean that once it came up, that by not telling people, by keeping it under your hat, by doing a bunch of stuff, it couldn't have been used like
sure.
one.
It could have been weaponized.
Yeah,
you know, just in the way news about it was handled.
Because I mean, this is
and again, I have no evidence that it is.
Yeah.
You know, a bio weapon, but it has been weaponized clearly, and it's being weaponized here.
Yeah,
by politicians shamelessly.
Well, it's being weaponized by anybody who wants to be a mini dictator, telling people what to do. Right? You know, you shouldn't be able to. I always get a load of this without showing this is how infected this is into the place. I stop off my, I had a couple guys over working on the place on a Saturday and Friday. So of course I go out and get lunch like I always do. So of course I can't find any. Get a load of this, John. Talk about a royal pain. The lady who runs the Home Depot on North Avenue, there's a Hispanic lady who raises her little, whatever, it looks like a, it's inside, but it looks like a cart, right? She has hot dogs and Polish, and she's been in there forever. The best hot dogs in town for $2.50. You know, I mean, whenever I go in there, I can't get by the place without getting something. And they shut her down. She's one person. She's working behind a window. Whatever. So
it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, and in this vein of how things have been, you know, distorted or amplified, either by design or by negligence, there is absolutely no systematic way of tabulating the casualties of this disease.
No.
And what's become clear is that in Italy, if you died with the virus and were tested after death, if they found you at home, if you died with the virus, you died from the virus.
Right.
So you are a COVID fatality. And Dr. Birx pretty much said the same thing last week. That this is, you know, that we have a liberal policy on assigning responsibility for fatalities to the COVID virus. So now what have you got? Was it Yale physicians said they've had a 60% drop in emergency room admissions for heart attack victims and stroke victims. Now, I can't believe that there's 60% fewer heart attacks.
No.
But these people are being routed out of the cardiac ICU because they're worried about, you know, and if they have any antibodies, if they have, you know, active symptoms, they are now co-opted by the COVID industry that it's turning into. And we're getting suppressed data about other health conditions that we're losing good data, we're distorting data shamelessly, and worse, we don't really have a handle on how bad or how not so bad the virus.
Jan, we have turned
clearly it's not as bad as we were told it was. Clearly,
we've been in a very short time, we have decided that the other citizens are our enemy, and I don't know how we can back. I went to get lunch for. Well, of course, there's this old dude I've known forever. He's an old carpenter, retired. And the place I went to get lunch, they're just doing the carryouts, you know, they're not doing anything else. So you go in there and there's hand sanitizers on the little piece of the bar. You can, you know, they shove the food over and you shove the money over. Sort of like the lepers in Ben-Hur, right, where they brought it out halfway and the food out and you went back and the leper came out and got it. Sort of the same thing. So I said to the guy, he's going back and he's re-gluing all the bars because he can't stay home. So I go, you know, what do you think about this making people stay home? Well, they should make them stay home. I said, well, you're not home. You know, you know, yeah, well, I mean, everybody's got an excuse for himself, right, while I'm here. And I said, well, what about the people that have already had it? Well, they should stay home, too. Why should they stay home? Well, because they still can be on a bus and you know, have it on their hands from one bus and go on another bus and spread it that way. Wait a minute. You want somebody who can't even get it to stay home because they might spread it around and you might get it? Well, yeah. I'm stunned by how much the government in 3 weeks or 4 weeks has been able to and put this kind of fear in a population where you're supposed to absolutely fear your fellow man walking down the block. When in fact they're the ones that screwed the pooch on this thing from day one.
I'm with you on that completely.
Which isn't to say that I want it, because I think you know, from being on the show and from being around and having a lot of family members die and survive. The fact is, in this country, Jan, and this is a good thing, there are all kinds of people that are, quote, compromised. There's people who live with diabetes. There's people who live with heart problems. There's people that have had 2 and 3 cancer bouts and have had chemotherapy 2-3 times that obviously are not, they're not like they were when they were 25. The amount of people in the country living, I'll say, health compromised, and probably you and I to a certain extent, we're in the mid-60s. We're not compromised necessarily, but we're not 30 either. I mean, if I'm going to get, you know, some massive disease, I probably would rather have had it 30 years ago than today, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that. But, I mean, the fact is, that's the truth, Jack, you know. And if something like this comes through, just like other flus, this is by far worse. It's way more contagious. It's probably at least 4 to 5 times worse than a regular flu, I would say, John. Easy, from what I've been reading. And a lot of people have complications, even younger people. And some people it comes back to. This is a very, very tricky. I mean, you and I have not, today in this conversation, have not at all tried to diminish the danger of somebody getting this thing, I don't think.
No, but I do think that we've overstated the fatalities.
Yes, oh, by far.
From the virus. And that's one of the problems in bandying around dates for when we can reopen. I think the death count is totally misleading. And it's steering us into crazy behavior when what we're doing is masking, you know, other forms or other causes of death and putting this kind of other name on it, and we target that, and we've already got isolation and, you know, loss of freedom. So now you've got, you know, distorted data that's forcing us to stay on lockdown. Maybe we never should have been on lockdown from what I'm seeing in the numbers, certainly in the fatalities.
Well, some people think it's a dry run for a political takeover. When you say about the fatalities, though, Jen, there's a flip side of that, too. I got a letter from a doctor in Southern Illinois. So I had a couple of people die from something weird in January, and it was like a virus that I never saw before, and I just put down pneumonia. And he goes, now I think they died of this. So, I mean, in some ways, I think we're counting everybody in the big hospitals, but in the smaller areas, we're not counting it as the disease.
Well, and that's always been the case with influenza during flu seasons. You know, you might see causes of death, even in 1918, bronchitis, lobar pneumonia,
yeah,
pleurisy, all these things that are respiratory ailments, and they all may be, you know, harmonizing with influenza or becoming worse because of influenza, but occasionally you will see influenza as a cause of death too, and there's absolutely no standardization even among the fatalities in the 1918-1919 epidemic for how these causes of death were arrived at, and not every country certainly subscribed, nor do they today subscribe to the same standards. So you get totally misleading data if you look at Italy versus the United States. You get totally misleading data if you look from Illinois to some other state. There's no standardization on clinically how you describe this disease or how you assign fatalities to it. And what we're doing is we're loading up the numbers now because we think it must be more widespread than it is, and therefore it's causing all.
We're never going to have these guys go back on the decisions they made and say they made a mistake. John, thank you. Might have to have you later in the week because obviously these topics are still hot. SB Futures. Now, plus, I might have to have you over for a beer. I'm tired of being alone.
Me too. I look forward to it.
We'll
have a good one.
We'll drag Eric over and we'll get Maddie from downstairs. I can handle four people 6 feet apart.
Okay. I'll bring a tape measure.
See ya. SP Futures down 950. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamau. She's AV, the lady in black today. It makes me very nervous. After the, of course, I'm not exactly Roy Hobbs, so I don't know why she wants to shoot me, but, you know, you never know. S&P futures down 10, NASDAQ futures down 30, Dow futures down 83. We were down a lot more than this earlier. We're down 30, in fact, so we're coming back. Who knows? Maybe we'll be up today. We had the big oil deal this weekend, but hasn't really taken oil. Well, we'll do some of it. David, are you with us?
I'm here.
Is everything in Europe closed today?
I thought they were. I don't think so. Is it?
Well, I thought they're big Easter money people, Monday people over there.
It could be. I don't know. On Reuters there were no quotes.
Yeah.
And on I went on this investing.com, which I use when Reuters isn't working, and they had quotes. So I'm not sure. Maybe it's limited.
Well, this thing's got them all the way up, so it had to be Friday. Anyway, over in Asia, Nikkei down 455, 2.3%. Shanghai down 13.4%. And I'm not sure about Hang Seng because they got them way up. That looks a little odd. But Japan is down over 2%, 455. They are definitely open. Oil prices are up, but you know, oil prices, here's the jump. They're up 12 cents. 22.80, they were 27 last Wednesday. So clearly oil has not gone very far at all with this. With this little deal they claim they have. Brent's down 23 cents, 31.25. Natural gas, 179. Arbob, 68 cents. Bonds, 10 years, 7.75, where they've been for a while. The Bund, minus 0.34, which they've been for a while. In Japan, pretty much flat right at zero, 0.003 positive. That's interesting. Gold down $8, but still, 17.44. Uh-huh. They had a huge run-up on Thursday as the Fed keeps pouring money in. I still can't get over that Thursday routine where they came out with the numbers. The Fed came out with another $2 trillion right afterward. Silver down 37 cents, 15.67. So silver has not really followed gold up here at all. The silver was over 17 a couple of weeks ago. Copper at 233, not so much there. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic and the weather, and then I'll handle the sports.
Good morning. 35 degrees right now. Be ready for freezy. Wind this morning. Actually, the day will remain pretty cold with some decreased cloudiness throughout the day. Winds could occasionally gust over 40 miles per hour. No chances of rain or snow, which is a good thing. The highest of the day should be 44 and the lowest 30. 60 degrees in Phoenix right now. Might get cloudy throughout the day, but overall clear and warm day. The highest is 78 and the lowest 57. And we have one accident reported on Stevenson North before Ashland Avenue. And probably about 5 minutes delays. But overall, traffic is clear, of course. Chief?
David, I don't know how much of a fan you were of the old Cubs, Glenn Beckert. Sorry to see Glenn die yesterday. So he was a Board of Trade member forever, wasn't he?
I think so. And I think he was up in the office as a manager as well.
Yeah, he was
great second baseman.
Yeah, he was. I thought he was probably the best second slot hitter I think I've ever seen. Hit behind guys, do stuff. I mean, it was You know, if they would have had a little more depth in that lineup, I think they'd have been fine. But they obviously did not. They had
great fielder and really smooth in the field.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. He wasn't as good as Kenny Hubbs in the field. I bet you don't remember
that. Although he lasted longer, didn't he, or did he?
Well, yeah. The guy got killed in a plane crash. He lasted
very long at all.
Right.
Because I couldn't remember Hubbs that much other than he was good, but then he didn't, you know, I forgot that he died in a crash.
Well, he was rookie of the year. I mean, I'm going to look this up. He and Billy Williams were back-to-back rookie of the year. 62 and 63, and I don't know which one was which, but I will certainly find that out. Played with the Cubs from 61 to 63. But the interesting part is I saw him. They had some films of him in in the 61 season. You know, played. I remember seeing him play for the Cubs. Don Zimmer, of all places.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was really something. So Don Zimmer went to the Mets. He was drafted by
the Dodgers too, I think.
Well, he got drafted by the Mets.
Right.
And so Kenny Hubbs is only 20 years old, and he played 160 games his first year at age 20. 172 hits, 5 home runs, 49. But he also, he broke the record, 1962 Rookie of the Year, so Billy Williams had his 63. 19 of 20 votes from the Baseball Writers Association. That's pretty good, huh? And all?
Yep.
And so he... Actually, no, I'm sorry. Billy Williams had won the award in 61. So 61 and 62, they won two in a row. And he broke the Major League record for chances without an error. But I saw some pictures of him playing in, is it Williamsport, where the World Series is? He made a couple of unbelievably spectacular catches as like a 12-year-old. But it was not,
wow.
I mean, it was not a secret that the kid could play. At that age,
right.
He was good. And he died in a plane crash, after his second year. And then Glenn Beckert was the next year, I believe. And so, there. But they had a long group at second. I don't know where Beckert would have played somewhere. I don't know where he would have played, maybe outfield or someplace. But he wouldn't have moved Kenny Hubbs out of the second base slot. But you would have had him somewhere, the way he could hit, for sure. Those are my guys. And I remember going out and seeing Kenny Hubbs in 1962, for God's sake. My uncles were fanatic, and we would go all the time from the south side. Anyway, David, we had the rundown this morning. We had the huge up week last week. In the midst of it all, I mean, you and I were both kind of incredulous on Thursday with the Fed pouring the money out right with those numbers. Obviously.
I mean, literally within seconds.
Yep.
It wasn't even that they came out with the numbers. Had it been 5 minutes later, I would have said, okay, they read the numbers or whatever. But, I mean, it couldn't have been 3 seconds later. It was unreal.
Yeah. A couple more things about Kenny Hubbs. First rookie ever to win a Gold Glove Award.
When you said it broke the record for chances, I had a feeling that popped into my mind.
How do you go? I mean, I consider myself playing softball. How do you go 78 games in 418 total chances without an error?
Crazy.
It's unreal. I mean, how can anybody be that good? I mean, if I field 4 out of 5, I figure I've had a good day. I mean, like a real good day. That's back when I was halfway decent. Anyway, so we got this thing with the oil thing. And oil's $5 lower than it was last Tuesday. So obviously that's not doing anybody any good. I mean, you and I talked Thursday.
Well, it was an iffy deal. I mean, they were hoping for 10, 12, even 15 million barrels. And it came out 9.7 and doesn't start till May 1st. And is only there for 2 months. Then they cut it to 8, and I forget the duration, but whatever. A couple months later, they cut it to 6. I mean, they can always change their mind, of course, but that is not the deal the market had hoped for.
No, but what's going on now with the fact that OPEC, to my mind, doesn't have a whole lot of power left anymore. Allegedly, every ship that can float is full of oil. They're full of it in Cushing, full of oil, full of other stuff too, maybe. But how exactly with nobody driving. When's the last time they filled up a cruise ship or an airplane, for God's sake?
So the cuts are a little deeper because, excuse me, Exxon and some others have announced that they're going to shut in some oil. But nevertheless, there was reports on CNBC. I'm not there, so I can't verify. But they were saying some places in Western Canada that crude was going for $4 or $5 a barrel. Well, at that price, the only people who can possibly even break even is Saudi.
Well, you've got, I mean, if you walk through the chain, because David obviously is a guy who spent a lot of time on the futures floors, when somebody gives you a price, and let's put it this way, if somebody says, I'm looking at Microsoft, it's trading 164.50, 64 cents down on the day so far. Well, obviously we haven't started, but pre-market. Now, when you look at that, you say, wow, I could go to Merrill Lynch, Smith Barney, I could go to PTI, and I can sell my Microsoft for 164. Well, it's probably 49 bid at 60, or 2 cent wide market. My spread is, you know, if you come to PTI, sell me 1,000 shares of Microsoft, or buy me 1,000, there might be a penny difference, might be 2 cent difference, might not even be that much. Because Microsoft trade, now other stocks, yes, yes. But you look at that, you get used to, as a securities trader, you look at the price of a stock, especially a liquid stock, and you say that's, quote, the price. Well, in theory, you're wrong because there's a bid price and an ask price, but you're pretty damn close. So I'm not going to debate with you. But now on a futures price, you look at oil is, say, $25 a barrel. Well, where is it $25 a barrel? Well, it's $25 a barrel in Cushing, Oklahoma.
Right.
Yeah, but, David, you and I are in Chicago.
Right.
You know, actually here, if we had some oil, we probably could ship it to the refinery here, and it might be, if we sit on a pipeline, it might be a couple of bucks. But if we're in, and I don't know, I looked a couple months ago, David, I couldn't tell if the pipelines were almost done, not quite done, whatever, going into the Permian Basin. Those guys have had a $10 to $12 per barrel, basis risk now forever. I mean, some of the guys before the place closed that I used to have an adult cocktail with over at Ceres once in a while were really into this oil thing. They traded all the oil stocks on the CBOE floor and so forth. And now they trade them remotely, but they would tell me, yeah, man, these guys, I mean, if they pull it out of the ground, it's going on a truck to the railroad, and railroad to New Orleans or Cushing, wherever, which way it's going. Plus, not all oil is the same. If you take light sweet crude out of Pennsylvania or someplace that's really good stuff, you're going to get X number of gallons of gas. Well, I'll use the term crap you get out of Canada. If oil's $40 a barrel, that stuff's $30 to start with, right, David? Because there's got sand in it. Stuff from Saudi the same way. It's, you know, I'm not going to say it's half sand, but there's sand in there. Stuff
from Russia, the heavyweight stuff and the sour and all that stuff. Yeah, it's different, totally different.
So if you start talking about a $3 or $4 a barrel quality problem in a $8 basis problem because there's no pipeline next door. Even if it's a pipeline, it's going to be, to give you an example, and I'm talking too much here, David, but if you ship corn, okay, better example, there's what, 7 or 8 locks on the Illinois River in the Mississippi before you're home free to New Orleans, right?
Right.
Every spot you put in, if the barge has to go through the lock, it costs you, what is it, 2 cents more a bushel or a penny more a bushel to get that corn to New Orleans. So if you're going through all 8 locks or 7, whatever the hell it is, you're going to pay 15 cents more than if you put it in under the last lock in the Mississippi. So that's what your risk is. Not to mention you have to truck it from your farm to the river. So everything is not like stock. So I'm going to guess what you just said, David, long way of getting there. I think a lot of people in this country are actually getting $5 a barrel.
Yeah, I look at the carry going forward. I mean, it's unreal. I mean, the May, which is, you know, now the front month because they go, you know, ahead, May is 22.88 on my board. June is more than $6 premium, 28.97. July is 32.30. So you have a $9.50 difference between May and July, 2 months with, you know, prices depressed. That is a huge premium. Now, maybe there's a hole in the supply. Maybe, you know, economies turn back on and, you know, this and this and this. But and I am not a student of fundamentals in crude oil at all. I know just enough to be dangerous, but it's hard for me to imagine a $9.50 premium July to May.
Well, what, just your guess, David, because unfortunately we don't have the, a couple of my buddies that like to lift a glass once in a while with us. If you decide, all right, that's it, I can't, we shut down our, you know, however many big an area in the Permian Basin, and we just say, screw it, we're shutting it down, and we furlough people. Hopefully we can pay some of them, or maybe we can actually get one of those loans from the government that nobody seems to be able to get, that the president says are going out, like, right and left, shot across the bow there. But all of a sudden things are getting a little bit better a month from now. What do you suppose the startup time is on that, David? It can't be a day or two to get your people back to start. I mean, it's got to be. I don't even begin to guess. It's like Boeing restarting the plant, only worse. How do you restart a fracking field? I mean, how long?
Yeah, and a lot of the equipment is rented. I mean, some is owned, but I mean, a lot of these, you know, rental companies rent that stuff on a contract basis, and it's a week here, 2 weeks there, and if you shut that down, it's not like that they rewrite the contract that day, I don't believe. And then if you have furloughed people, you know, getting them back and the like, and gear, especially, you know, these days with the virus and all this other stuff, I don't even have an educated guess, but I'm very confident it's not 1 or 2 days.
Well, I mean, those numbers you gave and the premium and the, you know, 2 months going out, I suspect that it would be high. I didn't know it would be that high. I don't know if that is that high. I'd be stunned if they were flat, let's put it that way.
No, mm-hmm. I get it, but $9.50 and $22.80 is, you know, 40% higher in 2 months. And supposedly, you know, I mean, at least all the data what you and I have is that the economies are still slow all over, not just here. Demand is weak, supply is heavy, and even if you have one of these, you know, reopenings of the economy on a rolling basis, we don't know what Europe's going to do, but. Just like the oil rigs aren't going to, you know, start pumping, you know, day one, day two, the economies are not going to start up and be back to 100% in a week or two either. I'd be surprised if in 2 months, you know, we're back to 85-90% of the economy.
Oh, I think there's zero chance of that.
Right. So, I mean, why is there a $9.50 premium unless the cost, like you said, if the pipelines aren't there and, you know, the trucking and the like are elevated, then maybe the costs are just that much more going forward.
Well, the guy from CNBC, the one, when I say the one guy, a lot of guys there, they're pretty bright, the big guy, the tall guy, Sullivan, he was somewhere up in, where's their refinery in northern Wisconsin? The one in Green Bay or something? I don't know, so he was up there somewhere. And, he said, if you pull up, they'll give you the gasoline. They have nowhere to go with it.
I know.
I mean, I doubt very seriously.
When you hit under 20, it was going to be a negative price that they'd pay you to take it away if you could.
What do you suppose the places here in Chicago, we've got the place in Indiana, the one place is declared bankruptcy, right? The Whiting refinery? That's not Amoco, but it's Whiting. So we got those guys, we got the guys in Bolingbrook. And we got the guys in Joliet, right? Those are the refiners. There used to be the guys in Crestwood, Clark, but they're closed. I mean, there might be a couple that I'm missing. You would know better than me. But what do you suppose their run rate is? It's got to be. I can't believe that there's 30% of the gasoline in Chicago being used today. It was used 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago.
I mean, obviously you have to have it. But if you're sitting on it, wherever, outside of Cushing, you know, wherever, Indiana, there's oil, whatever. I mean, wouldn't you be selling July at 32.26? I mean, to lock it in and hopefully they, as long as it's deliverable and you actually have it in delivery position, you know, I mean, I know it's New York Harbor, so I mean, you'd have to have it there somehow. And maybe that is built into the price with the cost of getting it there. But I mean, it just seems to me like that's
where do you have it?
And you should hope they take it away from you.
But where do you have it? The dudes were talking again. This was a pretty big expose they had. It was Wednesday or Thursday. I was listening, you can't get an empty tanker to store it. Cushing's full. I mean, where exactly, if you and I had a million barrels in Indiana, where would we put it?
I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, you're right. If we had,
and maybe that's the issue, you know, to get it to where it was deliverable, like New York Harbor or whatever, the transportation, and you know, trying to find a place to store it near there where it could be delivered is virtually impossible. And if you could, the cost would be prohibitive. Maybe
you mean you're right. If we had 100, somehow we had sequestered 100 railroad tank cars in a huge siding for a train that long, and filled them all up and waited till July, we probably could make $17 minus the cost of getting them over there. But who the hell's going to give us 100 railroad cars in a siding?
Right.
I mean, you're right. If you had that, that's the beauty of the futures. If you have the stuff in storage and you have your spot, you can wait it out. But what if you don't? Right. Where are you going to put it?
Right.
I mean, you know, that's the truth. I mean, we had one of the bumper crop years in, down to see my extended family in Columbus. My brother Dan and I were driving through all these small towns in Columbus. And if you ever want to see, you know, Illinois 40 years before Illinois was Illinois, go to Ohio. Because, you know, Ohio is obviously an older state, and the farms are much closer together than Illinois. I mean, if you ever come across the country, you know, in Ohio, virtually every spot you get on a highway, be it Route 30, be it Route 31, you name it, you go up in a little hilltop, you can see probably four or five farmhouses, David. And if you take, use some of the biking trails over there, and you go through these little towns, there's a sawmill, there's a bar, there's a food store, they're all over the place. Then you get to Indiana, and they're a little bit further apart. Illinois, a little bit further apart, and you get to Iowa, you're lucky if you can see one farmhouse, right? All you see is grain. So, I mean, it's just the progression as people went west. And, but in Ohio, I mean, we go by these, all these co-ops for people with their grain. We had a big year one year, and there's this one co-op, David. The guy's got all his, his big silver things, storage containers, or they call them silos.
Elevator?
Silos. Yeah, but the elevator. And all of a sudden, he's got this massive pile of corn just sitting out there. You know, Dan goes, well, between the mice and the rain, they better get that inside sometime soon. I mean, right? Or you got the biggest crop of mice, biggest, fattest mice ever to walk. But I mean, where else do you put it? Now, I got to believe that corn sitting on the ground in Ohio is not worth the $3.50 a bushel that you got on a board of trade for. Just saying. You got to get it out of there, get it on a railroad car, get it someplace. It's got to be a dollar a bushel job to get it somewhere, don't you think?
I'd guess.
Right, so what's your predictions here? Are we going to be up today after the big sell-off this morning?
It's trying, and you know, with the debt issues down and crude up, and you know that kind of thing, and copper's way up, which is also very often a signature. I would not sell the market lower. Let's put it that way. And I think it's just, you know, the area I talked to last week about 2880 to 2890 is upside potential in the S&Ps. And I definitely think, you know, hedging portfolios up there makes sense. Downside, that old resistance, 2635, should be good support. So I'd buy it about 140 handles lower.
Well, we have the Fed with their biggest challenge ever, because the economy is effectively turned off. Do you think the Fed can just pour enough money in to keep the market up until the economy picks up? I don't know. That's a big job, David. I don't know if they got enough for that.
And I think the real risk, even with that, say the answer is yes, rolling opening without proper testing and tracing and that kind of thing, I think is a big risk. I hope to God I'm dead wrong, we could get a second wave of this.
Well, I think we might too. But I also think that the chances, and I don't, you know, sorry I have to say this, anybody who thinks that when they go back to work, the chances of getting this are zero, I got news for you. It's not going to be
right, zero. I agree with you.
I mean, unfortunately, and you know, you and I are not exactly we're not the 25, 25 year olds that we used to be. Let's put it that way.
Hey, you know what? I have a good friend who just lost a son, 27 years old, paramedic. So I mean, they're not immune either.
What? How come so many people at that age? Was there anything else that?
No, he was totally healthy, but he was exposed, and he knew it. And I mean, he had protective gear and everything. Somehow, whatever, took a mask off, whatever, got it and died. 27.
Really? That's, I mean, you're hearing a little bit more of that. And then I heard from one of my friends that this family, I mean, it's people at the university she works, the father's in his late 50s, had a rough go, was not hospitalized, but, you know, it was not a pleasant 10 days. Wife, not so bad. Son, a little bit. And daughter, never knew she had it.
Yeah, I don't think, really. I mean, obviously, older and pre-existing conditions are worse, but younger, middle, or young 30s, 40s. I mean, my son, he's, you know, mid-30s. He knows a lot of people in Denver, same age, that are infected.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think what John said earlier, that one of the hospitals on the south side here, 30-40% of the people are testing have already had it.
Right. It's crazy.
It's great. David, thank you very much. SP Futures now only down 775. We may be up today. NASDAQ Futures down 25. So we're back from 30 to 8. That's a long way. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.